You are listening to a sermon by Andrea Perrett, recorded on Sunday, February 3, 2019, at the Point Grey Interminonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only, and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
So if you do need to shuffle around to see, please do. You aren't going to have to, there's nothing to actually like memorize off the slides. It's just some photos. I figured with our bit of snow today, we might as well transport ourselves to the southern hemisphere and pretend we're close to the equator for a bit. So previously I've been here to chat before, and when I came in end of September, beginning of October of last year, I came and presented on the Canadian Food Grains Bank. And as most of you know, the Mennonite Central Committee was pivotal in setting up the Canadian Food Grains Bank. And now CFGB has 14 church partners across Canada. And one of those church partners is Presbyterian World Service and Development, which is the Presbyterian National Development Committee, which I sit on for BC. And last time I was here, I also said in November and December, I would be going to Malawi on a monitoring visit. And so I did. And then I was very happy when I was invited back to speak. And so today I'm going to share a few stories. I went to Malawi, which is in Central Africa. It's beside Tanzania, Mozambique, Zambia. It's geographically quite small, but there's 18 million people. It's landlocked, except it has a huge lake on it, but no access to the ocean. On my trip to Malawi, I accompanied two of the Presbyterian staff. They go there a couple times a year to check up on our programs, to meet with partners, to go see the agencies that we fund. And so most of my days were spent either hanging out with our partners in perhaps some stuffy boardrooms, or if we were lucky, we moved the meeting outside under the mango trees. But that would be going over budgets and finances and things like that. However, the other days, we got to go out into the field. We got to go to the villages to actually see the people who were receiving the programming. And so I'll let you decide which of those days I preferred. But as a member of Presbyterian World Service and Development, I think I've pretty much figured out what our values are: compassion, justice, and partnership. And so going there, I was really confident that I was going to see some of Ephesians play out, right? Talking about equipping and building each other up. I know that Canadian Food Grains Bank and PWS&D, we really have values of working with people who are there on the ground. We hardly ever employ people to do the programs for us within our own resources, but try to resource and empower those who are there, who know their needs and can build capacity in their own areas. So I'm excited to say I did have some wonderful experiences and see a lot of equipping going on. And specifically, the one trip that I want to share with you was the trip that I took directly with the Canadian Food Grains Bank. Because PWS&D, we partner with all sorts of different places. The Presbyterian Church is rather large there. In Malawi, only about 400 members. Or sorry, 4 million members. Million. That's almost more than... That is more than Canada. Yeah. So we partner a lot with the Presbyterian Church, but we also partner with Canadian Food Grains Bank. And so for one of our trips, one of our Food Grains Bank projects was up in Karanga. And Karanga is in the very northernmost part of Malawi, up by the Tanzania border. So close to the border, in fact, that at one of the police checkpoints, they actually asked for all the white people's passports, because apparently there's a little bit of human trafficking that can go on, which is phenomenal, but for once we were singled out for a different reason. But we were up near the border, but for this trip, we had our Canadian Food or Grains Bank technical specialist with us. So there are technical specialists all over the world. Africa, there are four for the continent. There's one in the north, the east, the south and the west. And so we had Puto, who is the technical specialist. She's originally from Zimbabwe, but now lives in South Africa, in Pretoria, and she works for Canadian Food Grains Bank. And her responsibility is to go to the numerous projects in Southern Africa and to help the local partners with her expertise and make sure they understand what it is, the project that they're doing. And so she has projects in Zambia and Mozambique and in Malawi with us. And so we're very lucky that Puto, with her wide smile and her infectious laugh, was there with us. So we took a wonderful, I thought wonderful, beautiful drive up the cliffs. It's a major trucking route, so some locals don't really like to take it. But there's baboons on the side of the highway that if you stop, you can feed them bananas. We did not stop, major trucking route. But we took this trip and we went up north, and it's very remote. Most people don't like to take the trip. And we got to go see our project there. So this is the second year of the second phase of the project. So there was a project 3 years ago that was piloting, and now this time they're in their second of 3 years. Yeah, the second of 3 years with the second phase of the project. It's in the area called Mpata, and so it covers quite a large swath, and it actually goes up to the Tanzania border. So while we were there, we had our meeting in Karanga. We sat in our little stuffy room, not for very long, I'm happy to report. And then we went out to go see the project. One of the projects that is very popular, not just in Food Grains Bank project, but in many of the projects we visited there, were self-help groups. And these are amazing groups. You might have heard of microloan initiatives. It's kind of like that, but self-help groups are when people within a village or a community band together, create a group, and each week they give modest amounts of money into the communal pot. And so you can see the blue box there, that's their bank. They don't tell people where it's kept, which is very wise, and every week they give 100 to 200 kwacha, which is about 50 cents. But they give it in, and eventually they can start withdrawing. Now, the interest rate to withdraw from the bank, their bank, is 20%. Might seem a bit high, but the bank rate in Malawi is 35%. And so people at 20% are actually able to achieve this, and the interest goes back into their own pot, so it only grows. And so you have little pockets of people all around Malawi and in many other countries in Central Africa who are able to pool their money, take out loans for things like school fees, or perhaps they want to buy, someone was telling us they were buying popcorn. They would take a trip into the city, buy a huge swath of popcorn, and then bring it back and be able to sell it. It's prohibitive for people to save money to buy large something that we might think is not very big, like popcorn, but with taking out a loan, they were able to do it. They also have social funds where they're able to help each other with medicine, or if people get sick, they can support other people. So that's what the self-help groups do. And each group's different. They can take different directions. Because of this initiative, the one specifically the Canadian Food Grains Bank and PWS&D is supporting, they had taken the direction towards conservation agriculture. So they had previously been trained, and now this group, the self-help group, was made up of lead farmers. And so these lead farmers are the ones who get the training, and then they pass it on to 5 to 10 follow farmers each season. So for those who don't know, conservation agriculture is this kind of odd sect of the development world where it's teaching people ways of farming that not only reduces their own environmental impact, but makes people better able to withstand the culture or the climate shocks that go on in their area. So they're better able to withstand flooding, they're better able to withstand droughts. It also ensures that they can have better soil quality. And they do this through certain things like intercropping. So maize is the staple food in Malawi, so they grow a lot of corn, But conservation agriculture encourages planting intercrops, so legumes and things like that, in the fields, maybe putting in a banana tree as well, to help ensure that the soil has good nitrogen in it, it stays healthy, there's less runoff. They also, the traditional way of farming is to build ridges, to clear everything, build ridges and plant on top of the ridges. Conservation agriculture promotes mulching, which I'll talk about in a minute. As you can see from the photos, they're quite brown. And this is because we got there just at the very beginning of the rainy season. So the dry season was just finishing. The rainy season coincides with planting season. So over the 3 weeks that I was in Malawi, we began to see more and more activity in the fields as people were preparing their fields for planting. And even by the end of the trip, there were a few fields everywhere now and then that I actually saw a little bit of green poking up. And so I was just thinking this morning as we were singing all their harvest songs, which was wonderful, I was like, wow, they're 2 months into the growing season. It must be actually quite green now. So for the time that we spent with the farmers in the fields, some of them were showing us their fields, just showing the mulching work that they had done. And we got to go out and meet everyone. The next morning, we got up bright and early, 8 a.m., out in the field. The sun was already directly overhead, and it was about 30 degrees. But that is life at the equator. They had gathered us at that time, though, because the lead farmers were going to demonstrate to follow farmers conservation agriculture techniques, specifically mulching. So the presentation that they did, on the dry ground, they drew several boxes. So they drew one box and left it empty. They drew another box and scattered some mulch, or, you know, the leftover foliage from the last harvest. They scattered about half of it. And then for the final one, they covered it completely, so 100% coverage. And then the lead farmers, as they went along, they had some water and they started sprinkling it on the bare plot, on the half-covered plot, and the full covered plot. And then as this demonstration went on, about 10 minutes later, they went back and looked what had happened to the three areas. The area with no coverage on it, the water had run outside of the borders and had dried up rather quickly. The area with the half coverage, it had run off a little bit, but you could still see the shades of where the water was. And the third one that had the 100% coverage, when they dug under the mulch, it was still moist to the touch under there. So this demonstration was not being done in English, it was being done in Tambuka, the local language, and I think it's pretty easy to say I didn't even need the translation to understand what they were trying to teach and how mulching will help keep the soil moist and prevent runoff. So I was really happy to be able to see the actual equipping in process. To see Puto, our technical specialist, she was able to help during the demonstration, give some extra tips and help give a few more ideas about how to improve their techniques. There was even a Malawi government monitor, I never quite understood, but they were there to support because the Malawian government is so pleased with this sort of work that's going on. So it was a 2-day visit up in Karanga, but it was very busy. So I'm just gonna share one more story about seeing the equipping going on. This was a fertilizer demo, which sounds a little, Anyway, commercial fertilizer is very, very expensive and cost prohibitive for most people in Malawi. I don't think I've said yet, 80% of people in Malawi farm. Even if they live in cities and have a good paying job, they still probably have a plot of land somewhere to grow corn. Out of the 80% of the farmers, most of them are subsistence farmers, though, meaning the only food that they get is the food that they grow. And they usually cannot grow enough, which is why conservation agriculture is important, because it gives higher yields. But so fertilizer is one of the things that is prohibitive. And conservation agriculture is not organic farming, but it teaches people ways to improve what they're doing. So for this one, It was a lead farmer, and the self-help group had come together to make their own fertilizer. So the lead farmer had gotten a loan so that he could buy a big bag of fertilizer. It was this huge, it came from China, it was 20-20-20. And he was getting help from the village to make his own fertilizer. So they took a scoop out of the commercial fertilizer and put it on the ground. And then they took ash and they put it in there. And then they took some water. And then they took some manure. They didn't specify what animal, but they took animal manure. And then they mixed it all together. And so they made their own manure. They wrapped it up in a tarp and buried it under the ground. And so in 30 days from then, this farmer would have a whole thing of fertilizer that he could use on his plots. And so his big bag of fertilizer was going to last much, much longer and go much, much further. It was using local ingredients. Yes, it used the fertilizer, but that was only one part. It used locally available things. And it was going to be just as, or about as effective as the commercial fertilizer. So it was really impressive to see the group band together. Everyone from their group was there to help, and they were building each other up. The Ephesian passage that I chose today, Diane, thank you for bringing up that part, because there is so much in this passage. There's so many directions you can go. The Presbyterian Church right now is having continued discussions for about 20 years in a row about human sexuality, so this passage comes up quite frequently. But since my trip, how I've read this passage has changed. For me, now the part when I read it that's in marquee lights, flashing out in front of my eyes, is the last couple verses, when it says, "But speaking in truth in love, we must grow up every way into him who is the head, into Christ, from whom the whole body, joined and knit together by every ligament with which it is equipped, as each part is working properly, promotes the body's growth in building itself up in love." Example after example, while I was in Malawi, I saw so much of equipping and building each other up in love. This one project with Canadian Food Grains Bank had about 5 different examples, and that was our only one project. We had another one with CARD, which is Churches Action in Relief and Development. It's a local Malawian NGO, so it's been homegrown, but we met with them earlier in our trip to talk about a proposal that they were putting through to us with Canadian Food Grains Bank as well. So there's another group in Malawi that's getting ready, hopefully by May or June, to start another conservation agriculture project. So that's really exciting to see that all this equipping is happening and starts in one area, and then this other one's going to be in the south, and there's more going on there that are done through different church organizations, right? The Presbyterian's only a very small partner there. So it was really exciting and heartening for me to see this, to be able to share about the equipping. However, I think I'm missing part of the story, missing part of what Paul is talking about in Ephesians. It's not just one-way equipping that Paul's talking about. It's not just the stronger part of the body making sure that the weaker part of the body is taken care of. No, in Paul's words, he's saying every part has its own role. It's not just the arms and the legs that do all the work. The little pancreas and the ears and your hair, it all does work, and it's important for the rest of the body as well. It all works together to build each other up in love. And so during my trip, I found that I was quite unexpectedly brushing up against my own dominant culture, realizing how many, dare I say, colonial tendencies still linger in the background, that I was there to help, that we knew what needed to be done. Of course, I went to Malawi trying to be humble, wanting to empower others. But when I was confronted with the basic needs being so lacking, to see the disparity, I began to forget that the people I was meeting could be equipping me as well. I began to think that equipping was only going to be one-sided. So next week, story will continue. Next week, I want to share how I saw ways that the North American Church and the Western Church is and can be equipped by our poor poverty-entrenched brothers and sisters. The Malawian Church is thriving. And while they're faced with huge challenges on a daily basis to even feed themselves, my goodness, the lessons in gratitude and prayer and taking care of each other, we can be equipped very well. So be assured that the work of Canadian Food Grains Bank through the Mennonite Central Committee and Presbyterian World Services and Development, they're absolutely doing wonderful work. I can share many more stories about ways that I saw empowering and equipping happening. But hang tight, because next week I really do want to explore how we are all going back and forth, building each other up in love. Amen.